This is the South Florida Tech Podcast, a weekly show where we bring you the awesome, innovative people building our South Florida tech community. Each week, we'll introduce to you one of the Sunshine State's top business, startup, or tech leaders. Learn about who they are, what they do, and have some fun conversation along the way. Our podcast sponsor is Emerge Americas. Each year, global enterprises, disruptive technology, and elite startups are highlighted at Emerge's premier tech event, Connecting the Americas. The event is held in Miami Beach, which to date has hosted organizations from over 40 countries and featured over 250 speakers from around the world. Emerge Americas is transforming Miami's tech hub by connecting entrepreneurs, investors, leading business executives, and decision makers.
I am excited to have our guest here today. Joe and Joe are welcoming Derek Pearson, the president and COO of Code Fever Miami. And he also, I learned today, is an adjunct professor at Lynn University. He has a bachelor's in economics from Morehouse College and a background as a financial analyst and experiential marketer with several national brands. Life story. Derek and his wife have done a number of ventures together, including back in 2006, founding a company called Feverish Pops, a venture-backed frozen dessert company. And I have not had lunch yet, so this sounds great. In 2015, Derek and his wife, Felicia, started Black Tech Week, a national conference designed to support entrepreneurs of color. Derek is also a former White House Champion of Change, BME Fellow, and South by Southwest Advisor. Over the years, Derek has been recognized as a social entrepreneur who devotes his time to the growth of local ecosystems for entrepreneurs of color nationally. And to date, Derek and Code Fever Miami have been recognized by NBC, the Huffington Post, Source, and many other outlets. And if that wasn't enough, Derek is also continuing his studies at the Georgia Institute of Technology, where he's working towards a Master's of Science in Computational Data Analytics. That's a mouthful of a major too. Derek, you're an awesome fellow. Thank you so much for joining us today and being on the podcast.
Thank you, glad to be here.
And if you wanna get started with it, just tell us who you are, what you do, what is Code Fever Miami, and give us a little bit of background.
All right, so Code Fever Miami started off as a coding organization, but it's more of an economic development organization. We started off by training youth. We added adults, and we wanted to see some impact. And that impact stemmed from us desiring to get our graduates into high-paying career fields. So we started Black Tech Week. So Black Tech Week is a week-long series of events where we bring innovators of color from around the world to Miami, where they just mind share and give us all their insight, their wisdom, so that they can help others get careers as well as to scale their businesses. So Black Tech Week has transformed from not just a career-based organization to one where it has a heavy focus on finance. And that's the new direction of our organization, where we're trying to foster equitable capital pathways. And this has been a pivot that's been slow, but it's been happening year after year through iterating on Black Tech Week, adding our BCM residence program, where we bring in venture capitalists or angel investors to coach and guide startup founders to help them with their business models and become capital ready. To our Black Tech Weekend tour, where we go into other municipalities, we partner with local governments, local not-for-profit foundations, as well as major corporations that reside in those cities, so that we can curate that experience based on the needs and desires of all the players in that community. So we've just been iterating. We've acquired organization. We're going to make that announcement later, but that organization had a heavy focus on data-driven research. It was a think tank, and now we have all of that IP around rating communities of color, and we're rating whether cities, municipalities, states are diverse as it relates to providing resources to support founders of color. So pretty much now this is a full-fledged economic development agency, and we're going to be doing a brand change. Now we're known and we're currently doing business as the Center for Black Innovation.
So just quickly to clarify, so Center for Black Innovation, is that like the parent, and underneath that is Code Fever, Black Tech Week,
Correct.
You're new to be acquired, think tank.
Yes. you hit the nail on the head. So we still have Code Fever, which is going to be focused on all of our educational programs. We're still in school districts, and middle school all the way up to high school, where we provide STEM training. That organization and the work that we've done around that has also pivoted based on the current pandemic, and how we outreach to those students, and provide these resources for our local school systems.
So just kind of to like jump in, like, I mean, wow, what a mission, right? Like to provide economic opportunities. You know, like, did you guys always have the vision? Like, did you always have the vision, you know, cause you guys are doing like, you're doing education, you're doing innovation, you're doing a conference, you're doing connections. Or has it grown organically to be like, hey, okay, we have a good handle on that piece of the puzzle, but we should bring in this next piece of the puzzle? What's kind of been like the strategy for building all of this? Or has it, you know, how's it come together?
It has always been a big vision that we've had for our organization. But it's almost like when you create a startup, you always iterate on your products, on your business model. So our business model has been fine-tuned, and it's always been iterated on. It's been when we have a couple of pivots. So we, like I stated earlier, we started off as a coding organization, and we thought that, hey, if we get more people of color into technology, that will reach the goal of having them have create Black prosperity. So they will be able to provide for themselves. They will be able to transform their communities because they're actually making more income. Now it's more of a big picture, like how can we now create equitable capital pathways for Black innovation? And that's the vision that we have right now. How do we create these pathways where capital flows and high potential Black businesses are funded? So if you think back to 1967, when Black people were free, emancipated from slavery, between 1967 and 1919, that was a time period in which we had our highest amount of wealth, we had the highest level of ownership, land, and then all of us, so we created all of these epicenters, like the Black Wall Streets in Tulsa. Pretty much every economic development a major epicenter for economic development for people of Black people was created during that time period. Now, 1919, you have something called the Red Summer, which was a pandemic in and of itself, where you had these race riots, where individuals who did not want to see Black people succeed destroyed those communities. In the 1950s and the 1960s, you had something called urban revitalization, where the government put highway systems through every Black business and economic development center. So if you want to know where that Black power was, go and follow any interstate system and you'll drive right through one of them. So now we're trying to create the Center for Black Innovation in order to create a system to revitalize those Black Wall Streets and to create that Black prosperity. So if you look at our organization, all of our programs are aligned to do so. So when you start looking at Code Fever Miami and how what we're doing with the youth and what we're doing with adults, and we're trying to expose them and inform them and train them on these new career paths that can create wealth for themselves, generational wealth, and socioeconomic mobility. So once you go through that, you get to this level, now you need a job. How do you get exposed and understand the ins and outs of these new careers? So Code Fever has virtual sessions that we've been doing over the summer because of the pandemic. So you can tune into those experiences and you can listen to people like Leslie Miley, who's a director at Google. You can listen to directors at Snapchat that we bring on. You can listen to investors such as Marlon Nichols. You can listen to entrepreneurs like Brian Brackeen of Kairos. So once you go through that level, how do you then scale your businesses? That's where we have Black Tech Week. How do they get access to capital? You have the VC in Residence program. And all of these, again, is a circle, it's a network, it's a community to help create that prosperity that we're driving for.
That's pretty incredible and crazy to think about, like 1919 to now, the progress, and but also the steps backward and now hopefully the steps forward that we're making. I was curious, you know, like other founders or investors or companies, you know, you guys are doing so much in this space. What about people who are established, or like for me, example, like, you know, what can other founders do to support initiatives like this? You know, what's the role that the rest of the community can play? And specifically as it relates to you guys, is there a way to get involved? And also just as a founder or as a company, like how do you support or get involved in initiatives like this?
Mm-hmm. So we're always looking for key partners, especially as it relates to the new missions that we have. So right now we're looking for a lot of research partners, anybody who has the skill set to be able to do rigorous academic research that is able to be published in major publications. We're looking to add them to our team. If you are, I know Winco, you've always been a great partner of ours. So a lot of your graduates, we again reach out to them and we hire them into our program to continue to be instructors and work with our youth over the summer. So even though it's seasonal, it's based on the programs and who's funding what at that particular time, it still gives your people access to jobs and it gives us access to the talent to educate the youth. So I think to add on to that, we're always looking for mentors and to be able to connect seasoned professionals like yourself to startup founders so that they can, again, better understand their business model and see if it's correct and pivot if necessary. So right now, the funders, researchers, and access to experienced professionals to support the entrepreneurs within our network.
So, Derek, one of the things, I went to a dinner you and Felicia held. I think it was sometime at one of the Knight Foundation, Kauffman Foundation events in Kansas City, where you had a roundtable discussion of, you know, how do you raise money? How do we get more people from minority communities to raise money and get solid venture capital backed into their organizations, their ventures? But, you know, one of the unique things about what you all have done too, you've brought in some funding into your efforts, both for-profit and nonprofit, over many years of work. And that entire side of raising money is, you know, difficult in its own right, but you guys have been so successful at it. And, you know, I was hoping you could share maybe what your what success looked like for you, both in the for-profit side of things and then for nonprofit, right? For building up some of these ventures that we've been talking about, like Code Fever, Black Tech Week, and things like that. But we'd love if you can just dive in there for us for a minute, because I think that's just so intriguing, especially in this day and age when, you know, we're not as in the COVID times have kind of affected how we think about economics.
Yes, and see, that last statement hit the nail on the head, because what we've come to understand about not-for-profit work, as well as for-profit work, everything is about relationships. So you need to build relationships with the individuals who control the purse. And it can't be a superficial relationship. So there also has to be some win-win for both sides, some mutual benefit. So when we look at our funders, we curate the list and segment those funders based on, does this organization, does this individual align with our purpose? So does their interest align with our purpose? So when you're looking at a foundation, they tell you on their website, on the About Me page, this is what we're looking for. And if you don't fall into that area, you're going to be wasting your time and wasting their time. So make sure, first of all, that you align with whatever the person or the organization's desires are, what they're looking for. Once you do that, you need to identify an individual who can give you better insight on how to work and partner with that organization. But before you even do that, I would say have some kind of MVP. So even if you're talking about Cold Fever, for instance, before we even got a penny from the Knight Foundation, it was said to us that we need to have an actual program. We need to actually do some work. So we built a coalition. We like to call it the Black Tech Coalition in Miami. That coalition consisted of Wilfredo, even though he's not Black, Wilfredo of Lab Miami. It consisted of Lee Tony of Miami-Dade Community College, the Kerry P. Meeks Center. It also included MD, which is the Miami-Dade Economic Advocacy Trust. So based on that relationship, we created our first coding organization, our first coding event at Lab Miami. It was on a shoestring budget. After we did that, we were able to show proof of concept to Knight Foundation, and they came in a small way. But with that small way, we were able to create a huge impact. And from that relationship of them seeing that, hey, we can manage small dollars to build PR for and notoriety for the Knight Foundation, it increased. And once you get to that level and you start, after we iterated and we start focusing heavy on entrepreneurship, we start going to major corporations and saying, hey, when we do our road tours, Black Tech Weekend road tour, we go to that municipality and we talk to that corporation, we talk to that local mayor and say, hey, mayor, do you want to have some impact on your economy? Do you want to drive the local entrepreneurs to be more successful? Hey, corporation, do you want to hire a person of color that fills a role in UX, UI? Do you want to hire a software engineer? And we curate those experiences based on the needs of our sponsors, our funders. So that's the kind of game that you have to play, because the benefit for the corporation is that they have access to a vetted pool of talent, or a vetted pool of businesses that focus on a specific industry, say, for instance, fintech. And then if you're talking about the mayor, you're saying, hey, you're providing this resource to all of your constituents so that they can gain access to an organization that could potentially connect them to or provide coding services for them, or provide entrepreneurial support for them, or connect them to capital. So you have a mobile economic development organization and program that's picking up and plopping down into your city for a weekend or a week, and then instilling and building partnerships that will last, and networks where they can always reach back out to us. So it's a two-way street. So that's how we go about raising our money. And you have to be focused. You can't be everything to everybody. So even though our programs may sound different, when you start talking about prosperity and capital pathways, you need a pipeline for entrepreneurs. You need a pipeline for talent to support entrepreneurs. So that's how Cold Fever fits into our overarching organization. And then how do you support a large amount of entrepreneurs to gain access to capital, to hire individuals, or to just get support on refining their business model, you have Black Tech Weekends. How do you, Black Tech Week, how do you expand Black Tech Week to a national level, even though it's a national conference and we bring people and track people from around the world? We have our Black Tech Weekends so that we can, again, do a grassroots type expansion and PR campaign to bring awareness about the work that we're doing. And then the VCN residence is more curated top for it's people who are potentially ready to actually raise money. And they just need a few more tweaks to make sure that their business model is ready for them to get that first big check.
Yeah, it sounds like the perfect trifecta. I feel like it's like education, capital, connections, all kind of like, you know, at their different levels, but also circulating depending on what, you know, a person or organization might need at the time. And I can just say, like, I so relate. Like, I wish we had talked before Yuha and I started raising money when we raised capital for the first time. You know, it's so funny because we preach to Wincoders, like, always read the about page on a company. And for us, like, we went through so many term sheet discussions and initial discussions with people who were interested genuinely, and they were open to having the meeting, but like, we weren't aligned. You know, like, I'll never forget, like, you know, there's someone awesome in the South Florida community, and he just doesn't invest in education, but we really synced. So there was the genuine relationship, but ultimately we weren't, like you said, we weren't aligned in terms of like what he's interested in and what our mission was. And so have had gotten a lot of great advice and made a friend and a mentor, but ultimately it would have never worked out for the capital. But speaking,
it's a marriage.
Oh yeah.
And you have to, it's like, until death do us part.
So, until the contract does it.
You have to vet them as much as they vet you. So one of the experiences when we founded Feverish Popsicles, and we got venture back capital. I don't want to say the name of the organization, but it's a huge multi-billion-dollar organization that said, "Hey, here's this money, go ahead and do it." But their industry was not in the food industry, so that caused a lot of friction. And my job, which was expanding the organization and making sure the operations were on point, became communicating to them on a daily basis.
Oh, my goodness. I know exactly what you're talking about. That is the truth. So speaking of which, because obviously your co-founder is also your wife, which, you know, I'm in that boat as well. Just maybe to hear a little bit about that, like, even when you guys were raising money and pitching to, like, day to day, like, you know, basically, would you recommend your spouse as having a spouse as a business partner? And just, like, can you share a little bit about, like, how you guys do it, how you make it work?
So I would recommend it. If
she might be listening, so you gotta, you know.
If you have different expertise that work together. Now, if you're both experts at the same thing, say you're both experts at corporate law, you may always be hitting heads. But she has an amazing expertise. She's an amazing speaker. She understands how to sell anything and put things into stories that resonate with people. Me, I'm very hands-on, very analytical, very short, and very factual. So once she gets the things that I say and how I operate, she can put the story behind it. I think it's the separation of church and state. That's how it is. She has her things that she works with. I have my things that I work with. But when we need to come together, we come together because we know each other better than anybody else. So when it's time to sell something, or it's time to describe and just inform people about what we do that well. And we do that extremely well. So I think it's also beneficial to have somebody that you can lean on and that understands everything that you're talking about, as opposed to just being unaware and not able to support in a significant way. So she understands everything about the organization. She is the executive director of the organization. So even if she doesn't understand it, I explain it to her, or the rest of our staff explains it to her and brings her up to speed. And then she can do her part in refining, advising, and doing the things that executives do.
And I want to, we only have so much time left. So I want to like take that and pivot a little bit. You guys obviously work well with each other because you've been so successful for so many years, but what's it like, you know, family side, being parents, you know, being out there and being a family, like what do you try and do on the weekends? How do you try and, you know, balance being professionals and being your in your personal life too? And maybe that's, you know, something also, you know, for all of us to just listen to and understanding, you know, when to start and stop work and making sure that you can also enjoy, you know, being with family and friends, you know, and even during this time, it's probably more important to take that time more than others.
So about me, I have hard stops. I shut things down and I don't care. Felicia, she may be trying to work on stuff late. Like, I don't want to hear it at this time. This is not the time and place right now. Even though the bedroom is not the time and place for this, the living room, the kitchen, it doesn't matter where we are. It is not the time, because between these hours, that's when we handle that type of work. I just want to say this. A lot of people ask a question. Like, there's never an opportune time to have kids. You just need to have your kids. That's never going to be a perfect time. So it's different for us because we created the organization and we run the organization. So we can create our own schedules if need be. We can leave when we want to and take care of emergencies, take care of our family. So having kids is not too difficult. It's just making sure that you prioritize your family and make sure that they're just as important and taken care of as every other thing on your calendar. So right now, since we're homeschooling based on the pandemic, we separate days of the week now. So I may be in the office on, off a day, and she may be the opposite. She may be the inverse, so that we both have time with the kids and we both have an equal amount of time to continue to make sure that our other baby, which is the business and the organization, is on point. So it's about grind as well. So now I'm not going to say that, hey, everybody needs to have hard stops and do, like, when it's a grant that needs to be done, this is a major meeting, or it's a deadline is near, you have to put all hands on deck. You have to stay up for all nighters, maybe 48 hours. It doesn't matter in order to get the job done.
Yeah, it's so funny. Yesterday I was talking to a fellow entrepreneur and honestly relate to everything you're saying so much. We also have a 4-year-old and a 1.5-year-old, and I know your kids are super cute seeing them on IG. But it, you know, yesterday someone told me the pain of discipline is a lot easier to handle than the pain of regret. And, you know, it's all about having that routine and sticking to it and making it work, because the last thing we want to do is regret not having the time with our kids. Cause I mean, this, every minute they get older, it's like, oh, come on, like, don't get too old yet. And want to make sure you're there. So thanks so much for sharing that. So we do want to kind of cap it off today with a little rapid fire. So just a rapid fire question round. So would love to know, what is a book that's on your nightstand or Kindle right now?
Ooh, what always Message to the People by Marcus Harvey. That's like, what type of book? I have many, but
what's the book you're reading right now, or the last book you read?
Ooh, Data Driven Marketing. I'm reading that one currently.
Oh wow, that you're nerding it up. I love it. What about, what's the last fiction novel that you read?
Last fiction novel, I'm still reading. It is Cult of Blood. I think it's the young lady, Harvard graduate. She's created a series of books that is based on Yoruba spirituality, similar to Harry Potter.
Okay, that's cool. What about, what's your most productive time of day?
My most productive time of day, I'm a night owl. So some, like, even though I shut down, I may turn back on around 11 just to get extra work done and stay until 4 in the morning and take a 2-hour nap and come back.
Okay, so what time do you go to bed?
Many cases after 12, probably around 1.
And what time do you wake up?
It ranges. I try to wake up around 8. But if I have the time, I'll sleep in until 11 now.
That's if
I'm staying up until 4 a.m. So a lot of times I'll stay up until 4 a.m. to get a grant done. And I don't go to sleep until 4. And people wake up and they start sending me emails. Man, did you even sleep? And then now I write them back. I'm up now, 10 o'clock. So I may get 6 hours or something like that. So
that's awesome. What about favorite podcast?
Ooh, favorite podcast. What's the name of that podcast? It's a podcast that Felicia always has. Felicia has like a list of like 6 podcasts. But if you're talking about I consider Urban View on Sirius XM. Always listen to them.
Awesome. And then is there a motto or a saying or a mantra that you live by?
That I live by? Not really. I don't have a specific motto. I just grind and try to get everything that I need to. I have a vision and I just shoot for that vision. So no, not really a motto. I guess the vision of my organization is my motto. And it
changed. I love it. Just jump, hashtag just grind.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I think there's just one other question we would have for you, Derek, and that's what advice do you give to aspiring tech leaders in South Florida?
The advice that I would give is to build lasting and real partnerships, and not superficial partnerships. I think we also need to make sure that everything that we do is equitable for everybody who wants to participate inside the ecosystem. So that's the advice that I would give, and let's do it together.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us today, Derek. And thank you to you. And of course, pass on our thanks to Felicia for everything you guys do for the South Florida tech community. I know, sometimes it's just straight up a labor of love, and you guys do so many good things we didn't even mention the co-working space too. I don't think a space called Tribe down where Derek is today that they started. I mean, they're always got new ideas of brewing as we heard today. But if anybody would love to get involved with what we're doing with South Florida Tech, you can go to southfloridatech.com, learn more there. Thank you, of course, again to Derek for joining us. And of course, our co-host, Joe, for coming in episode number 2.
We'd like to thank our producing sponsor, Media Ops. They're the premier global media platform for technical communities with brands such as DevOps.com, Security Boulevard, Container Journal, and Digital Anarchist. DevOps.com, their primary brand, attracts and engages a thriving online community of technology professionals around the world. It is the largest collection of original content relating to DevOps on the web today, featuring up-to-the-minute news, highlighted stories, blogs, and more.